welcome to AIJ Cast, a podcast featuring conversations and performances at the intersection of art, inspiration, and justice. I'm your host, Marthame Sanders. Before we get to our episode, a little reminder that we are halfway through our crowdfunding drive for 2018. I'll have more to say about that at the break, but if you're interested in finding out more, you can go to our website, aijcast.com/give. On this episode, part one of our conversation with Aisha Brooks Lytle. Aisha is the executive presbyter of the Presbytery of Greater Atlanta. She is a pastor and a vocalist, and we got a chance to sit down recently at the presbytery office. Aisha Brooks Lytle, welcome to AIJ Cast.
Thank you.
I want to start with music and ministry and try to trace those lines in your life, both individually, and I'm sure there's places where they overlap, of course, as they overlap within you.
Yeah.
But why don't we start with music and how music kind of grew into your life as a vocation?
Sure. I've been singing since I was a little kid. My spiritual auntie, Aunt Paulette, had us in a little kid's choir. And actually, when she caught how much we were into harmony, put together a little a cappella ensemble called Praise. And we would sing early CCM music when it was like Maranatha music. Yes, little black children. As the dear, like in four-part harmony, which was actually quite awesome. So,
yeah.
And so my love for music and church stuff as well as secular stuff. So I've always sung, but I grew up as a fundamentalist Baptist. Mm-hmm. So I did not know that I could be a preacher or that God would even call me to be that. So when I was minding my business as a jazz voice performance major at Temple University, some friends of mine needed a leader for a cross-cultural mission trip to Jackson, Mississippi with mm-hmm. Voice of Calvary Ministries with John Perkins. These are my friends that worked at the Presbyterian Church. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're doing this racial reconciliation, mission trip, and we really need leadership. I was like, y'all don't have no black people to go with y'all with these little white kids down to Mississippi. So so I went. And they were headed off to seminary, to Pittsburgh Seminary. And they said, listen, you should put your name in the hat to do middle school youth ministry. And I'm like, we don't even have women pastors. Mm. So it was on that trip that I said to the Lord, if you really need me to do this as a cross-cultural kind of ambassador, then I'll do it. So coming out of school, thinking that I'd go directly into the arts or arts education, I went from being on the bandstand to middle school youth ministry.
Mm.
And so it was kind of like, it was hard because my husband at the time was getting his master's in composition from the University of the Arts. So I was like, and performing, and I'm like, well, how does he get to do that? And I'm doing sardines in the sanctuary. how is this a thing? And so it felt like I was having to choose.
Wow.
Right as I was coming out of Temple University. But what happened was that it felt like my soul opened up doing middle school youth ministry.
Mm.
And it was a whole other side of myself that I did not know. And so what I found was learning to what it was like to be a pastor who's a musician, right? Mm. And so when they needed to do like fundraisers for mission trips, I'd say, well, why don't we bring a jazz band? Like my group will play. So our group, we would do these concerts where it'd be classical, jazz, and gospel and raise like thousands of dollars, for one of our mission trips or a coffee house or any of that kind of stuff. And so it was, even though the church was large and suburban and white and all that kind of stuff, it was still, hey, what are the ways that we can use your gifts?
Hmm.
So every church I've ever served, they've tapped into the music that we've offered, and we've been able to link music and mission and that kind of stuff.
So you've raised a bunch of good stuff that I want to circle back around to and dig deeper. I do want to connect the dots between the Maranatha four-part harmony up to jazz vocal study at Temple University.
Sure.
So you're singing in the church. That's kind of...
So I'm singing in the church. Like my first solo was Heirlooms by Amy Grant off of her first Christmas album. Okay? Let's go in. That's me at 13. So there, you know, this idea that I was all like Aretha or like, like what? I'm all like Maranatha, like literally, right? Because my mom loves soft rock, so she is to blame.
Okay.
But the other stuff that I would listen to, she listened to the Winans, she listened to Commission, she listened to Take Six.
I'm singing Mary.
Oh, Mary, don't you weep.
Tell Martha not to moan.
Martha, don't you moan.
Well, 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 Mary. Tell Martha not to
moan,
'cause Pharaoh's army, don't you know they've been drowned, Lord, singing Mary,
oh Mary, don't you weep.
Tell Martha not to moan,
Martha, don't you moan.
Well,
so there's this sort of, I would say, jazz infused gospel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was probably in my ear. And then the stuff that happens around, even Maranatha, even the early CCM stuff, you can take, I mean, even on my own projects, right? You take that stuff and then you can still swing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a jazz idiom. So it was probably, it was a Take Six stuff. It was the summer going into high school that my uncle only listened to Temple University station, and at the time they played jazz 24/7 WRTI in Philadelphia, when now it's jazz and classical, but that's all we could get in the Poconos. So I'm like, oh my god, what is this? And by the end I was like, sweet. Actually, Jimmy Scott's album All the Way came out about 91-92, and that was in heavy rotation.
When somebody loves, it's no good unless she loves you. All the way.
And so that was sort of like what captivated me into listening to jazz. And so that kind of started, that started a lot of that. So actually at the church we were at, the Baptist church we attended, I only had time to sing on the adult choir. And so I kind of got to lay out on some of those sort of old school gospel jams.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like scat, like in my solo stuff. And they were like, this girl is crazy. So out of that, one of the choir director was handing out pamphlets on like, hey, here's some local music education. And there was a jazz improv class at the continuing ed stuff downtown. And Kurt Harmon, who is the dad of, I think, the drummer in Pieces of a Dream. One of those guys, like one of those kind of fusion jazz guys. His dad was like the department chair or something at Temple. And so he was going to give a private class, but no one signed up. So he said, well, I'll give you private lessons. And I said, well, I had been praying about transferring to Temple because I'd started off as English, but you had to do a jury.
Mm.
So that class with him prepared me for my vocal jury, which got me to jazz voice performance, coming from an English major at Messiah College.
Now, was there any tension for you in the sacred secular sense of music at that point?
Honestly, the tension in the 90s in that context was more about being Afrocentric and Christian than it was sacred secular.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the same people that are listening to gospel are listening to WDAS, like the urban radio station in WDAS in Philly. You know, all, they all play gospel Sunday morning. And then by like 12 o'clock, it's like, ain't no stopping us now. You know what I mean? Like, so that's not a thing for black folk. Not that I, Now, the type of gospel, meaning old school versus new school, or Kirk Franklin was an issue.
Right.
They're like, oh, gosh, stop. What are they doing? You know, so you had that kind of interplay. But more of it was me. The more pushback I got was listening to Tribe Called Quest, you know, Malcolm X movie coming out. That resurgence of, like, wokeness, you know, what we would call that now, or being aware of what was going on and wearing your hair natural. That was all new stuff. That was more of the pushback that I got. In the early, in the mid 90s, an expression about being unapologetically black and unashamedly Christian kind of stuff.
What, and you're talking within all contexts or specifically within the black church context?
I'm saying that particular traditional conservative Black church context.
What do you think the pushback was about?
I think that in the 90s, this is the way if I read history.
Sure.
Don't get too militant. Don't get too, you know, think about it, right? You've got civil rights, you've got Black Panther stuff, and then you have the 80s, which felt like a washover of the 50s,
mm-hmm.
as if none of that stuff happened mm-hmm. at all. And then in the 90s, you got Rodney. I mean, I walked out with my high school and got in trouble. Like, I was supposed to go on somebody's prom that night, but we all like walked out. Vice principal was like, "What do you know about this walkout?" In reaction to the Rodney King case.
Yeah.
I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." 2 o'clock, I'm like, "Come on, no justice, no peace, no justice." I'm out in the streets. My old friend that I went to prom with, his sibling, his relatives were like, "Yeah, your prom date's on the news protesting. Hope she makes it to prom this weekend." Yeah, yeah. So I think it was that resurgence. And yeah. I mean, it's the same. It's no different, right? It was no different then.
Sure.
There's always a group that's like, okay, you know, we're fighting for what's right. Don't get shot.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get too deep. Don't go too far. Yeah.
There's always this, to me, and I see it now within the context of Christians who identify as LGBTQ, that there's this, the incarnational notion of what God has created is good. So there's always this push and pull, especially I think within marginalized communities,
yes.
of being able to embrace that what you are is what God has created you to be. And so I wonder if that's part of that tension of like, you know, it's okay to be Black, but not too Black.
Well, it's don't cause a tension that will get you sort of in trouble. Or what are you saying about me who is not wearing my hair like that? Mm. Are you saying I'm less Black?
Because
I got this weave because I pay good money. So if you're trying to say I'm less Black,
right.
we're going to have a problem. But again, it was the 90s.
Yeah.
You don't have that same push and pull as much now around that particular issue.
Yeah.
But you will have a push and pull for some churches. If a young teen wears a Black Lives Matter t-shirt mm-hmm. in worship, it's like, are you, what, how about Jesus matters?
Right,
like,
right,
so
right,
you're just
right,
always,
right.
You're just always going to have that push and pull for how each generation makes sense of expression and justice.
Aisha Brooks Lytle on AIJcast. We'll be back to more of our conversation in just a moment, but first, a quick word. As always, I encourage you to visit our website, AIJcast.com, where you'll find links to our artists, their events, news, and products. I do want to highlight one upcoming event for you. On Saturday, November 17th, Love Beyond Walls has their annual event, Sharing Hope for Thanksgiving. You can find more information about that on our website. I'm also excited about a new initiative that I'm a part of called Prophet House. It's an effort to provide affordable housing to artists. The project is still in its development stages, but you can go to their website, Prophet, PROPHET-house.com. And I do want to encourage you to take a moment and consider how you can partner with us in our crowdfunding drive. We have heard from you how important and even vital this podcast is to our listeners. And when we launched this podcast, we did so knowing that artists are in many ways our modern day prophets. They are truth tellers even when we don't want to hear the truth. They are the ones with the imagination to imagine the world the way it could be. My own personal experience in these conversations has been nothing short of transformative. I have been changed by these experiences, and I hope you have too. Our goal for this drive is $12,000, which is just a portion of our budget. The rest we achieve by applying for grants. And one thing that we are proud to share with these granting organizations is the financial support of our listeners. And when you make a donation, we will send you a thank you gift courtesy of our artist partners. One of those artist partners is OK Cello, whose music you're listening to right now. You can find out more at our website, aijcast.com/give. And now, before we jump back into our conversation with Aisha Brooks Lytle, we listen to a song that she and her late husband Carl recorded for their album His Ways. This is their arrangement of As the Deer.
As the deer panted for the water, so my soul. Alone are my heart
And maybe that's the incarnational piece, is it's the generation defining what it means to be Christian in this particular moment.
That's right.
You know, you and I share this Presbyterian confession where we're supposed to be constantly trying to figure out what it is that Jesus is calling us to be now.
That's right.
And you alluded to this earlier. Kirk Franklin is introducing elements of hip hop into gospel, and people are wigging out because of that. But it was the same thing a couple generations before. Thomas Dorsey bringing in blues into the sacred realm, and people freaking out about
it. That's it. And even then, doing some jazz stuff.
And jazz, yeah.
Was a little bit of an issue in some of those churches, and now people are like, "Oh, you can, the jazz ensemble is here."
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, okay. So it just takes people a moment sometimes to say, how do we make sense of this expression?
So you're back, we'll flash back to Temple University. You're there and you have this experience of cross-cultural ministry where you're going down to Jackson, Mississippi.
Right.
And you're there and you have this moment, you say on the trip where you say to God, okay, is this what you want me to do to be a cross-cultural ambassador?
Right. But my life has always been cross-cultural.
Okay. Can you tease that apart a little bit?
Yeah, I can. I think desegregation programs in the 80s, right? And so I was one of those little Negro children where my mom was like, that little school up the block has a better educational program than that little school down here. Mm. So I had to catch a bus from my neighborhood to the working class white neighborhood to go to school. And that was mixed. Mm-hmm. And then I went to one of the largest magnet high schools in Philadelphia, which is all like you got to get A's and B's to get in there. So shout out to Central High School in Philadelphia, PA, class of 251. But that's the thing, right? And so that's you can only have a certain GPA,
right?
But they are very intentional about the racial makeup.
Yeah.
So my whole life has always been both and. Mm. But saying that I will leave my home and my neighborhood, so to take the job at Wayne Presbyterian Church would be like me at one of our churches in Buckhead and living. And even the way Atlanta is laid out is just a little bit different than
the way Atlanta's very unique. Yeah.
We're laid out. But the mainline suburbs of Philadelphia, it literally is like you cross City Line Avenue and it's less diversity, very affluent, very white. And so I went from my neighborhood and my very black church of thousands of people, but still African-American, cross-economical, to a 2,000-member white church, tall steeple. And I was like, and had to live there.
Yeah.
So my boss at the time said, you can't commute from Philly to Wayne, Pennsylvania. People want to see you in the grocery stores. They want to see you in the bagel shop. And so I was trying to figure out, well, where am I going to rent? What am I going to do? I mean, 23, making about that much money, right?
Living on the main line.
Living on the main line.
Right.
And this family let me live with them. Wow. Literally the Whitemans, not making it up. They're still family to this day. Shout out to my siblings. But yeah, so, and they were like, just be part of this family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was, and so I was often tell the story that once I had said yes to this role and yes to leaving Philly for the main line, at 23 years old, Carl drove up to the Whiteman's house.
That's your husband.
It's my late husband. Yes. And so I start crying. I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. I can't do this. And Carl's like, girl, it's too late now. You better get out this car. You done took this job. You better go ahead. I ain't playing with you. So I was like, eh. I mean, best decision of my life to say yes to that call, to say yes to loving that community, to have an inside view on white affluence and to know that a ghetto is a ghetto, whether you're in a $1 million ghetto or you're in a project. A ghetto is a ghetto. And so they are just insulated socioeconomic bubbles, and that everybody needs to get out of everyone's bubble.
So
I had two stints there.
Okay.
Right? So right out of Temple from 98 to 2002, middle school youth director, go to Princeton Seminary because that's where everybody else went. After a stint at Palmer Seminary, served other churches. And then when Carl started to get sick, the position to go back and to be the associate for mission opened up. And they were like, everybody was like, you need to come home.
Wow.
You need to come home.
Wow.
Yep.
So I'm curious, you talk about being in this fundamentalist Baptist background where your music ministry is embraced, but no preaching, no proclamation, no teaching.
It was, well, I would beg to differ how much it was embraced, because it was more jazz oriented.
Okay.
There was some pushback. I probably shouldn't know that, but I, you know, gossip travels well. But at the time, there was some low-key pushback.
Okay, so you're pushing at the edges musically.
I'm pushing at the edges visually, yeah. Right? I mean, I cut off all my long, straight hair.
Okay.
Wore a little, you know, fade, you know, had a little fade. I'm wearing, you know, baggy clothes and red, black, and green t-shirts.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm just doing it, right? And then I start dreadlocks, yeah. Right? In 92.
Right.
It's not a thing, right?
It's Arrested Development.
It's Arrested Development.
Soul,
it's De La Soul.
Tribe Called Quest.
Tribe Called Quest. It's I'm a Nubian Queen.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
all of it, right? So so I am pushing on the edges of that. And I'm pushing on the edges of my own discovery in terms of Black intellectual Christianity. Like,
yeah.
all I'm pushing. And that's when the invitation to come and be you in an unfamiliar place.
Yeah.
And we will make space for you.
Wow.
That's how you go from being at an all-Black gospel Baptist church and this Presbyterian. I mean, I asked my youth pastor at the time, I said, are they ready for me? He said, they don't know what they're ready for.
Mm.
So let's just try.
Mm.
And if you go to Wayne Presbyterian Church and they will, in their minds, I grew up there. Like, I got confirmed. I was baptized. Like, when I came back as the mission pastor in 2013, somebody, because they all remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I've married their children baptized their grandbaby. Like, they, like, you're part of us.
That's your home church.
That's my home church.
Yeah.
So for 20 years, so for some of them, they were like, remember when you were in high school? I was like, I was not in high school, but I was so young that they just deeply connect to that's our girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at some point along there, you go to seminary.
Go to seminary. Yeah.
And you're there. And while you're there, you and your husband, Carl, record an album together.
We did. As I was coming out of leaving Wayne to go to Princeton full time.
Mm-hmm.
We were recording some stuff, and so we finally pressed, and actually all of the photo shoot stuff, all of that is at Wayne. It's under a tree, I just realized that everything was at Wayne Press.
Wow.
So it's all kind of in the backdrop and stuff.
Yeah.
So we put that out, and then we would, you know, we would do concerts. We would do, do kind of fundraising things. I've played at, good Lord, all kinds of churches, white, Black, Korean coffee houses, Philly, New York, New Jersey, wherever people were. Hey, we're trying to kind of introduce jazz, a Christian jazz experience.
Right.
Which I would probably differentiate from gospel jazz, because sort of that has more gospel underpinnings to it, versus just straight ahead, here's a bossa, here's a swing, here's Afro-Cuban, the way the album is constructed. And then it had some original stuff. Mm-hmm. It had a pop, kind of folk pop remake, and that's the Jonathan Brooks, Because I Told You So.
If I gave you the sky, if I laid down my life, would you believe me then?
So we redid that song, but because we did it as Christian artists, there were people who heard that song was like, oh, that's the song about Jesus. Like, do you believe him because he told you so? And I'm like, I'm not sure that the original artist would say that, but I'm glad you get why we put that on there.
Interesting.
So, or the Swinging Shepherd's Blues, right?
Along the mountain pass, there is a patch of grass where the swinging shepherd plays his blues. His sheep never stray, dancing all day till they see the pale and the yellow moon. And then he leads his flock at home where they all rock to the tune of the swinging shepherd blues.
Probably not talking about Jesus, but when Christians hear it, they're like, oh yeah, like, so it's just reforming, or one of the other songs was Someone to Light Up My Life, right? That's an old school kind of Latin jazz standard. And so at the end, the refrain just says, like, who will light up your life? I need someone to light up my life. Just kind of reframing standards, praise and worship, as the deer's on there,
yeah.
And then some original stuff that I did.
I'm curious. So where did this happen? Like you were at Princeton. You were on your way to Princeton.
It must have been like my last year at Wayne.
Okay.
And then, yeah, like somewhere in there, because we took all those. Yeah. So like my last year, it took a minute to record.
Sure.
And then to actually push out.
Yeah.
So I just knew we were like selling them and doing all that kind of stuff. Like about 2000, I started some in 2002. So I think copyright is like around 2001 or something
okay.
like that.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that gave you a different approach to seminary, whether it was through the lens of that album or through the lens of you and Carl being musicians?
I think it was always going into seminary. I'm a musician first.
Okay.
If this all goes bad for me, I can sing on the bandstand. I can teach a little music class or something. Like, I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know at this point that I would just say first. I would just say I'm a pastor who's a creative. I'm a mm-hmm. singing pastor. Like, I'm a both and. So it's like pastor as creative. Like, what is your art? What is your craft?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to make sense of my craft with my with the ministry.
Yeah.
So much so that even like in the recent years when I've had seminarians, actually one of the seminarians who comes from this presbytery, Sam Yenbata, is a saxophonist. And part of the reason why I asked for an artist, you know, seminarian mm-hmm. was so that they could see that it's possible,
right.
that it interpolates into what you do, that it will impact the kind of ministry that you have and that you seek to encourage.
Aisha Brooks Lytle on AIJcast. You can find her on the Presbytery of Greater Atlanta's website, which is atlpcusa.org. On our next episode, part two of our conversation with Aisha Brooks Lytle. AIJcast is made possible through the support of listeners like you. This is a critical time to support things that we think matter. And if you feel that way about AIJcast, I encourage you to go to our website, aijcast.com/give. There you'll see a lot more information about our 2018 crowdfunding drive. We can only do what we do because of what you do. Thank you. And we're also grateful when you follow us and share us on social media. We are on a multitude of platforms, AIJcast. Our theme song is written and recorded by the band Marred Fame. Our calendar music comes courtesy of OK Cello at okcello.com. Photography support comes courtesy of Ely at stephanieeleyphotography.com. And we are engineered, mixed, and produced by that guy who is always aiming higher, Al Mudeef. With all the holiday parties coming up around the offices, Al is extremely clear about what he is going to contribute to our potluck meals.
I'm doing sardines.
And I'm your host, Martham Sanders, encouraging you to go and create some beauty of your own. Peace!